Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, thank you all. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people, the Eora Nation, on whose land we're speaking today, and pay my respects to their elders. Also like to acknowledge my fellow speakers, and all of you have come here today and taken time to come here and listen and find out what's going on, and for your support. But I suppose especially for those people in the Northern Territory who have been subject to the draconian measures under the Northern Territory Emergency Response. And your hearts and thoughts goes out of them especially. But today I'd like to talk about a number of issues. In the main, it's in respect to the Northern Territory intervention, but also the environment has allowed this assault on common decency to be introduced and to persist. And to persist now, are we 2 years into a Rudd government? Not quite sure. I haven't seen the difference yet. But we're truly at the crossroads. And I think people had enough is enough. The Rudd government didn't have to do much to be better than the Howard government. And they apologised, and they've milked that event shamelessly. The best analogy I can give is that the Rudd government started well and then tripped and fell. Because the policies and practices of the Howard government have been adopted without question by the Rudd government. The continuing failure of governments to respond to the dire position of Aboriginal people and ensure sustainable progress fuels a frustration and sense of urgency felt by many Aboriginal people. But remember, the Howard government could not have achieved what they did without the implicit support of the state and territories. They were all Labor governments. They operate under the cover and darkness provided by John Howard, and that continues to this day. And in keeping with that, we've got to also acknowledge the amateur brinkmanship of many of our leaders. I'm talking about Aboriginal leaders in inverted commas. They must be recognised for what they've done and what they've achieved in the past 3 or 4 years. They were fools trading one strategic position constructed over many years for simplistic, self-posturing grandstanding. And I think it's about time we named them. I think the circumstances in which Aboriginal people find themselves today, well, the analogy I'd look to, resembled Yasser Arafat's compound at Ramallah. We've been held in impotent isolation while the government decides who they will deal with. And enough is enough. I mean, the government believe that they've had an epiphany when the Little Children of Sacred report was tabled. They discovered there was something wrong. Ministers always have epiphanies that they assume office and then discover there's a problem, despite the fact they've been a politician for 20 or 30 years. But we're used to that. But what was rolled out in the Northern Territory intervention was lazy, indulgent blanket policy, which did little about people. Was that blaming people themselves for the conditions? Not about the structures the government created, about the lack of support in terms of infrastructure. But what the Northern Territory intervention was promoted by a government view that Aboriginal people had to be reduced to be the status of beggars in their own country as a prerequisite of getting services. Any fair-minded and compassionate Australian could not support that. But our government and our media would have us think so. I can only hope that's not the view of Australia itself. If it is, then we're lost as a society. But I prefer to see Australians in the main as misinformed, as living in a climate of fear constructed by government and the media, to blame those who have less themselves for our problems. Well, it's a big end of town getaway with the ongoing rape and pillaging of our country. In remote communities, miners get leases for nothing. They tear out the minerals, they sell it overseas, and we beg them for some tax dollars back. I prefer to think that the looters of our country. And one other point on this. There are many who characterise people who dare to offer a view on the intervention as being against the intervention. That is shallow-minded and mischievous at best. I mean, those who dare to offer an opinion and do something about advancing that opinion all agree something had to be done. And one thing you do applaud is the government finally realised what their failure of the past was and the quantum of resources now required to actually do something. And the challenge for government is how to sustain that effort in a way that advances Aboriginal people's interest, not demeans them and demoralises them. All the money going to the territory is what I'd like to call cold money. It's about services, about infrastructure, it's not about people. The government can't sustain their mission managers, or what are they called? Government's business managers, whatever they're called. And one of the ladies up there referred to him as an egg.
Yeah,
that's you.
Yeah. He sits in his nest.
Yeah.
I forgot to tell you about our business manager. He's got a big high fence, barbed wire as well. He's got a big red nest. He sits in it and look down. So I call it egg. We call it a big egg, sitting down.
Yeah, I think the egg, an undeveloped life form which requires lots of care and nurturing. But the major point of intervention is as true as it is anywhere in the country, we must assert it. If people are doing wrong or harming others or mismanaging, we must do something about it. If we don't, someone else will. We don't disagree with that, and no one in the community would either. But not everyone is doing something wrong. Kevin Howard would have us suspect. But I think we need to unpick the numerous aspects of intervention. I mean, the income management is lazy, indulgent policy. It's draconian. It puts everyone in the same boat. It demoralises and destroys people's spirit. The health checks that were mentioned in the discussions previously, they were a good idea to start with, if they were legal. Nothing's happened since. It was the Big Bang Theory, and they haven't thought about what they'll do afterwards. The alcohol management. Alcohol is a problem in many communities, but it needs to be managed with people managing it. Prohibition never works. The issue of pornography, agree, but that's not the major issue. That's how you manage it, but you manage it with people, not demanding and imposing issues on people. Adequate policing and security, we agree with that. I think Peter Kinney's been crying out for that for years, but not when they come in as stormtroopers. The housing and municipal services, again, we agree on the increased effort. It's a problematic implementation criteria and required to give away control of your land for, is it 60 years at the moment?
Yeah, 60.
Yeah. And they're doing it here in New South Wales at the moment as well. It's one thing we all should note about interventions and government action. If they come for the others in the evening, they'll come for you in the morning. Never forget it. There are others that need to be named here. There was a member of the National Indigenous Council. They endorsed without question and were explicitly involved as architects in intervention, and we need to remember who they are and hold them to account. And many of them walk among us in Sydney. I won't name the other states. Warren Mundine walks around this camp. John Moriarty does. Adam Goods does. Dean Witters does. These are people who agree with the intervention. I'm just naming a few. I always said we shouldn't speak about them in polite company. But again, they walk around this community unaccountable for it. They gave the government the credibility and legitimacy to do this. There are others, the explicit supporters, the Noel Pearsons, Galarrwuy Yirrpinggu, who decided to support the intervention after he got $15 million for his Mission Beach development. There's Alison Anderson. I'm not sure where Alison's coming from, but... And then there's the attack dog herself, Marcia Langton. It is. But there are those in government who have made the calls to people who dare to offer a view or an opinion and to take some action. Ministers' advisors, Rita Markle and Michael Dillon. There are a few of you in this room, on this table, who have got the call when you dare to speak. Don't you care about the women and children? How dare you? And politicians who dare to speak. Do you know your pre-selection's coming up? This is how insidious it is. And this is government policy and practice. The Howard government, I think we're very good at silencing dissent, and most of our social commentary organisations now are silent. Rudd government, I can never see the difference. The Rudd government has made it an art form. We're still not hearing anything from the social commentators. Where are they? At a time when Aboriginal people lean to the most, they're not here. They're not there. There are exceptions. We'll mention those. But the media are explicitly part of this government action. I'll take you one glaring example. It's just the most recent one. I mean, the Australians has always been the propaganda arm of the Howard government and now the Rudd government. But one glaring example is in the Melbourne Age last weekend, a paper which I thought had some integrity, but sadly not. Russell Skilton launched a tirade about the Crime Commission, the government machinations surrounding its activities and future funding. I'm sure you all saw it in the papers. where Rudder's now going to roll Bob Devis and it'll be coming back. But the real intent of his piece soon became apparent, for those who dare to speak. He criticised Larissa Berendt, and I should say it's my partner, and that's why I felt acutely. And also Pat Turner. In his words, he said they shouldn't be allowed to run NITV because they supported, they were not pro-interventionists. He also attacked the awarding of the status of Australian of the Year to Mick Dodson. It was wrong and it should be taken away because he upset pro-interventionists. Now, this calibre of journalism today is lazy, ill-informed and outright mischievous at best. And at worst, it's a strategic coordinator and moral corruption of our society. But most of Australians get their information from these people. They're not there to tell the truth. They're not there to inform you. They're there to entertain you. That's all they do. They should collectively hang their heads in shame and should not forget their actions. Never forgive those who serve the masters' deceit and moral and social corruption. And sadly today, that's the majority of our media. There are exceptions, but not many. But the message is clear. If you have a view which differs from the government and the tabloid media, then suffer the consequences. Public ridicule, blacklisting and constant attack. Or is it whitelisting? I'm not sure. But there are many people who are here with us today who, despite this campaign, continue to speak and take action. Those who keep faith with the ideals of fair-minded democratic society, who have a social conscience which requires them to speak. Without them, many others would feel the wrath and the consequence of ill-considered government zealotry. And I think the introduction says I was a bureaucrat for 25 years, so I have many misdemeanours to make up for. But I'll never work for the bastards again. Sorry? 2 minutes. I've got 2 minutes and 15 pages. All right, the bleeding of social comment, I'll just try and go right through it then. The other point about public servant, another issue at the moment, Aboriginal people have got to abandon the tall poppy syndrome and instead acknowledge, embrace and celebrate the intellects and thinkers in our community and those who are supporting us. They're the people who can take you forward. It's a point we need to keep focusing on. I've had enough of going to Aboriginal meetings and saying you don't come from the mission, so you don't count. Enough is enough. But one thing, the other point I'm going to make, you can't rely on public servants to be a break on the excesses of political masters of the day. I mean, recent changes in the new political operational ethos of the public service, which one Peter Shergold brought in, has reduced it to a mere shadow of the former political body it once was, a former professional body it once was. They're devoid of the capacity for open, fearless and frank advice and can't be trusted. Aboriginal people have to provide the policy and the solutions. If you don't, the bureaucrat will. It's what we have today. Given I've got 2 minutes, I've got to go straight to another point. Another point was just mentioned was about if Aboriginal people feel aggrieved by the denial of rights, we seek another remedy. And in this country, we have no avenues for seeking any remedies. The government will not listen. The courts are not open to us. You must go to the international arena. And the government should have expected it. There are numerous complaints that have made to that arena. Although I saw Warren Mundine in the paper on Wednesday call all those people a joke. I think I know who the joke is. And I'll just quickly, I'll go through this, I'll make this available, but there's one point I need to make about all of a minute ago. We have to match the government in terms of their technocrats. If you don't match them in terms of the technocrats and the evidence and the information, you're not going to win the game. I mean, government policy is not a quiet little game played with, on a level playing field. It is inhospitable and it's cutthroat. It's on a win-lose arrangement and those who don't have power lose. That's how it works. One issue that's missing in Aboriginal affairs is a permanent lobby. We are the only interest group, if you were to know, without a lobby. And I think the results are glaringly obvious. It needs to happen. All the major interest groups have a lobby. That's where they get their resources. That's where they keep the political masters honest to some extent. Because there is no rights framework. But in closing, given only 10 seconds, I'd just like to paraphrase Martin Luther King, and he said, in the end, it's not the voices of our enemies, but it's the silence of our friends. And it's something we should remember. There are a few people here and people here today who actually are our friends. There are very few social commentators speaking today. I mentioned it before. Amnesty is one who have taken up the role, but the others are silent. I'm not sure if they're scared. I think they're scared of Marcia Langton, but that's another issue. But it's, the real problem is our collective silence as a society. We must maintain the rage about this. Never forget who was silent. Never forget who advocated for the bad aspects. If you do, they'll do it again. You have to be held to account. Now, for many in our community, they must find their conscience and find their sense of justice. They must find the intestinal fortitude to speak, to comment, and the silence is deafening. I hear there are 10,000 submissions to the Bill of Rights Inquiry. In my view, that farcical charade put on by the Rudd government. If that is it, then their voices are not backed by any semblance of justice, and they're inept and unable to translate those in positions of rights and justice to what's happening here today. I can only surmise that Aboriginal people aren't important enough in their eyes to warrant support, so shame on them. But I'd like to say our collective silence is something we should be looking at. We should not ignore it, but view it with extreme concern. It is time to speak. Thank you.